dispatch center, which had been hit hard by vacancies. She recruited part-time employees from other nearby police departments to assist with the workload and worked through the hiring process to return the dispatch center to full staffing. Ann deserves full credit for successfully navigating the dispatch center through this difficult time. Ann is also very active in the community. She volunteered her time as a girls' softball coach. In fact, she coached my daughter, which was not an easy task. And is selfless in giving her time to others. One of her coworkers recently described Ann by saying that she is the type of person who would give you the last dollar out of her pocket. We're very grateful to Ann for all you do everywhere. Thank you, Ann. If you may.
Good. Yeah, let's go. Yep.
Nope, we'll go right in front. Right there. There we go. Sorry.
And we're thankful for all of the staff and family that came out to support our employees as well.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. I also adopted another cat from them a few months ago. So I'm very pleased to present this proclamation designating Tuesday, February 25th, 2014 as World Spay Day. Whereas pets provide companionship to more than 71 million households in the United States, and whereas human societies and animal shelters have to put down millions of cats, dogs, rabbits, and other animals each year, many of whom are healthy and adoptable due to a lack of critical resources and public awareness. And whereas this tragic overpopulation of pets costs citizens and taxpayers of this country millions of dollars annually through animal service programs aimed at coping with the millions of homeless animals. And whereas spaying and neutering has been shown to dramatically reduce the overpopulation of pets and feral cats, providing to be a wise investment in saving animal lives and taxpayer dollars. And whereas veterinarians, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens work together to ensure the spaying or neutering of more than 49,000 pets and feral cats through World Spay Day in the United States in 2013. And whereas veterinarians, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens have joined together again to advocate the spaying and neutering of pets and feral cats on World Spay Day 2014. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City of Atascadero that February 26, 2014 is hereby designated World Spay Day. The City Council of the City of Atascadero is authorized to issue a proclamation calling upon the people of Atascadero to observe the day by having their own pets spayed or neutered, or by sponsoring the spaying or neutering of other person's pets or of an animal in a shelter awaiting adoption, signed by the City Council. And I believe Sherry, there she is, I'm sorry.
Yes.
She's out there ready to accept.
Ms. Chapman, if you'd like to come to the lectern and share us some thoughts.
On behalf of the Board of Directors and our staff and all of our volunteers and 172 cats, we want to thank you so much for drawing attention to Spay Day, which is so important, but it can't just be a day. It has to be an everyday occurrence. And I want to thank the City Council for always remembering the North County Humane Society in your budget. And I hope you'll remember it again coming up again here soon. Because of your generosity, it helps the city of Atascadero take in more cats. And we're allowed now to have vouchers, discount vouchers, for all Atascadero residents. It's a $25 discount voucher. And also, because of the County Humane Society, City of Atascadero, and also the private citizens will help $25 off that charge. So again, it's an everyday occurrence, because right now kitten season's coming up, and last year we took in 242 homeless kittens. And I'm looking at some of the members here. Some of you have adopted some of our kittens from last season, and thank you so very, very much. And again, you figure that two cats unspayed can produce over 420,000 cats in 4 years. That's just in 7 years. That's incredible. So again, there's no reason to not help and support, and it saves the city money, which in turn saves you money. So again, I want to thank all the people that are out there. It takes a village. I know Paws for Cause, they're out there doing spaying, neutering, trapping, and Kathy Innes does a remarkable job. And also, we want to thank Woods for also offering all kinds of spay and neuter programs. So if you want to get your animals spayed and neutered, and again, this is for dogs and cats, just call your veterinarian, set up that appointment, and come by. And we're open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4:30, and we'd be more than happy to give you a voucher. So again, I want to thank you so very, very much, because it's so important. It saves us all money, and more importantly, it saves lives. Thank you.
Thank you. We will join you with Ms. Torgerson for our last picture of the day.
Thank you so very much.
Also, I'm here tonight to talk about a project we're actively working on. It's a 101 Corridor Mobility Master Plan. Thank you. We started this project about a year ago, and we've been working through it relatively quickly with the goal of having a good set of information to put in our 2014 Regional Transportation Plan. So what we've done so far, we did a phase one outreach where we went to many presentations. We presented at councils and county advisory councils. We had an interactive tool on our website that got almost 200 comments. We did intercept interviews throughout the county. And basically what we were trying to do, what that first level of analysis was, to narrow down the corridor from the 70 miles to approximately 20 miles of area that we could really focus on and do some technical analysis. Right now we're in that next phase of technical analysis, and the big reason I'm here is that we are doing our phase two outreach, and our website is active right now. You can go to the website. We have an interactive mapping tool where you can click on locations and provide comments to us about the conceptual improvements that are listed on the website. So please go to the website and provide us your comments and tell everyone about it. We're accepting comments now through the end of the month. So February 28th is when that'll close. And we want to get as much public input as we can during that process. So just a little oversight of what we've done with that. What you see here are two lines that represent the full corridor, starting on the left there at the Santa Barbara County line and working north to the Monterey County line. The dark line represents all the public comments we received and what they were about. So they were location specific. People chose a spot on the map and told us how they felt about it. So you can see there, right around Trafficway and Atascadero, there were a lot of public comments. That blue line behind it is what the performance measurement that we did told us about the corridor. And this is what it looks like. Basically, those darker, the areas where it peaks along the corridor are the places where there are most problems on the corridor. So what you see in Atascadero is that it peaks in several places along the corridor, and that orange line, those four orange lines across the corridor show you the areas that are part of the technical analysis. So I should have actually started this presentation by thanking the city for hosting a workshop here. We really appreciated having that workshop here 2 weeks ago. We had about 20 people come and give us their comments, and we really focused more on the Atascadero area improvements throughout the corridor and parallel route improvements as well. And we'll develop packages of improvements that will go into our regional transportation plan. So again, we're out right now asking people to provide input to us via the website or via email if you want to send it to us. We're taking as many comments as we can at this time. So the website, the project-specific website, is slowcogconnectingcommunities.com. But if you go to the slowcog.org website, there's a direct link. There's a big picture with the 101 on it. And click on that, and it'll take you to the project website with all the details. And that's all I have to present tonight. So if you have any questions, I can take them.
Excellent presentation once again, Ms. Berry. Thank you for being here. Any questions by council? Could you repeat the website?
Yes, it is slowcogconnectingcommunities.com or slowcog.org, which is Slowcog's whole website.
Very good. Any questions by staff while we have Ms. Berry here?
No, we've been participating in the different TAC or technical advisory groups, and we've been following this. So it's important for everybody to look at that website and see the projects, areas, and leave comments. So staff will be doing that also.
Very good. And this participation really does help. San Luis Council of Governments is the organization that works with Caltrans to prioritize funding for major road projects in our whole county. And you can see with the input we've had from the local community, it does help await and get a little more help where we have a problem area in our community. So thank all of those in the community that have helped participate with this, and please do more if you haven't done so already. Again, thank you, Ms. Jessica, for being here tonight.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the consent calendar. Any member of the council or public wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, we can go ahead with the consent calendar, which are considered items routine, uncontroversial. I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next, updates from the city manager.
The time and brought them all up here, but there was one lonely one left. The new flamingos have blended in very well with our existing Caribbean flamingos. The last one continued to live at the track, but with no one there to feed it, its future was pretty grim. So the LA Zoo staff brought in kayaks in a final attempt to capture the lone flamingo and circled her in an attempt to catch her. She clearly did not want to be captured. And finally, one of the zookeepers from LA jumped into the water out of her kayak and was able to capture the flamingo. They have transferred this last flamingo to Atascadero. She is on display at the zoo, and she has been named Hollywood in honor of where she almost remained. It's nice to be able to give a happy ending to a story that we thought wasn't going to turn out so well. So it's exciting. Come by the zoo, take a look at the flamingos. They're beautiful. They're enjoying their new habitat there. We had the father-daughter dance last weekend. This very popular event broke all records last week. Friday night was sold out, and Saturday night is still gaining in popularity. More and more people attend each year. Pismo Beach held their father-daughter dance on Saturday night as we did and were sold out. So they referred calls that they were receiving to for their Saturday dance to our staff. And as a result, we had guests from Napomo, Pismo Beach, and from all over the county. This event is one of staff's favorite events, and if you've ever seen the father-daughter dance, you'll know why. It is definitely a night that these little girls will remember forever. Little girls and not so little girls, everyone. It's a magical night, so it's a great success. And last but not least, I have another story of community generosity. As we talked about last time, Sylvester's Burgers and that team had been very generous to the community. Cayman Cycle and Run and Keith Schmidt have also gone above and beyond in a very generous community. Keith Schmidt, owner of Cayman Cycle and Run, has gone above and beyond to help the Atascadero Youth Basketball League this season. Atascadero is always seeking team and league sponsors to help cover their recreation league costs, but often falls short of enough support to cover the cost of the demand. For 2014 youth basketball season, the league came up short by 11 team sponsors. Cayman Cycle and Run very generously offered to take on sponsorship of all 11 teams. Very generous, very much appreciated. I know the teams appreciate it, as do we. In addition to that show of generosity, a week into the basketball season, Mr. Schmidt... And that's it.
Well, that's plenty. Thank you. We move on to community forum, which is an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item that's not on the agenda. So please come forward. And we welcome Pastor Steve Shively of Refuge Church, one of the members of the Ministerial Association that we appreciate rotating through here and coming out every Tuesday night. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff. Just like to say a word of prayer for your meeting. Looks like most of your meeting maybe is over tonight. I don't know. Is it a short night?
We are hoping so.
Okay. We'll pray everything goes smoothly. And if you want to join with me, let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, we thank you for tonight, for all your goodness and blessings, God. And we thank you for this beautiful place that you've put us to live in. And we absolutely want to give you gratitude for that. For all the provisions you've given to us. Thank you for the recent rain we've had, and we pray, Lord, that you would send more our way. We thank you for our city council, Lord, and the job that they do. It's not always easy, so we pray for wisdom for them, as well as for our staff, and for your mighty hand to be up on our community here. And Lord, we thank you as well for just dying on the cross for our sins and your love for us. Thank you, Lord, that whoever will call on your name would be saved, God. And your mercies are new every morning. That's very evident. So again, bless the rest of the evening here. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public wishing to share? Welcome.
Mayor and council members, my name is Brian Bullock. I'm from Santa Margarita as of the past 6 months. I'm with the American Cancer Society, and I've been hired to manage the Relay for Life events in San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, Atascadero, and Paso Robles. We're real lucky that the Atascadero event is one of the stronger events that I've inherited. It is scheduled for, excuse me for looking at my notes, April 26th and 27th, right out here in Sunken Gardens. And I'm essentially here to kind of introduce myself and ask for any support I've ever been in. And I've worked the past 20 years in newspaper business, and I've been in a lot of council chambers, and you have a gem here. Anyway, that's it for me. I just wanted to make you aware of the Relay for Life event and ask you for your support, and I will be following up with emails to y'all. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. And we do appreciate the organization's involvement in our community. We've often participated in many ways. And you can keep our city clerk informed. She'll make sure we are all informed of how we can help. So thank you for being here. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on any item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. We do not have any public hearings, so we will begin with management reports. And the first one is approval of Master Site Plan Amendment 2014-1, Colony Park. Now, I happen to have a convergence of interests on this particular item, as I own property within 500 feet of this location, and so by law, I have to step down as mayor, and then we'll be joining the community. And could I will ask Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant to run the meeting for this portion, and I'll ask our city attorney to comment on what my involvement may or may not be.
Yes, Mayor, what you may do now that you've announced that you have a conflict is step down from the dais as you propose. You may take a seat in the audience and participate as a member of the public to the extent that this item affects your personal interests, which here would be your property ownership.
Oh, well, this will be different having the mayor sitting out in the audience rather than being back in the back, so that's cool. Very good. Well, thank you. So this is about the Colony Park Master Plan Amendment 2014-1, so staff report is from Warren. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. This report tonight is a briefing, an update on a master plan amendment to our Colony Park here in town. Just a quick summary on this. This is a city-initiated amendment, so this is generated by staff. The Parks and Recreation Commission has reviewed this, and they are recommending approval. The community impact from this change will be that we are going to create a suitable site within the master plan for Colony Park for the recreation center. There was retention of the existing softball uses, identified the site for the skate park, identified a site for a future swim complex, provided for the enhancement and protection of Atascadero Creek and the riparian areas. The idea was to provide for a balanced design to accommodate both present and future needs, and also have a park that could grow as the city of Atascadero grew in size. So this exhibit here, which is also in your staff report, is the master plan that was adopted by the City Council in 2005. As I mentioned, in 2013, the City Council did direct staff to work with a group of citizens on the concept of developing a special needs playground within the area of Atascadero. Staff, especially the police chief, has been working very closely with this group on this. At this point, they've gone through a number of conceptual designs. We've basically narrowed down sites that the Colony Park would be the most appropriate site. The exhibit that's on the screen right there is an artist's rendering of one of the concepts that has been considered for the special needs park. So there's still some work to go on developing and funding the park, but we want to make sure that we have the council endorsement for a site so that as the fundraising moves forward, there's assurance that we know exactly where we're going to put this facility. So we're calling this the 2014 Master Plan Update. There's five major components to this update. The first is that the rec center and its parking lot were built in a slightly different location than what was shown on the original master plan. So basically, we're amending the master plan just to show those facilities in their as-built locations. As I mentioned, we're recommending we move the playground as well as the spray park, which is a water play park that was part of the original plan, to an open area next to the community center. Originally, these were programmed next to the creek. This future swim complex size is a little bit smaller based on where the parking lot was built. There's still adequate size for an Olympic-sized swimming pool there if the city decided to build that facility in the future. We've also added some additional basketball, bocce, and petanque courts in the park. So those are shown now in their as-built locations. And then there is an amphitheater that was originally shown next to the... So the purple, number one, this is the as-built location of the recreation center. Originally it was shown a little further up here. Two, this is the relocation of the playground. So the special needs playground would be located in this area. This is a graded flat pad with sidewalks around it, so it's ideal for development of the playground. The spray park feature would be in this other developed pad area right here. The future swim complex was originally a little bit larger area. This is now the shown area for the swim complex. The hard courts for different ball games, these have been built. They're shown here in the brown as area number 4. And then area number 5 right here in green, that's the potential relocated area for the amphitheater. So all the program elements that were shown in the 2005 master plan are still on this plan. So we didn't take anything out. We just moved them around and changed their sizes, but it's still the same program elements. So the Parks and Recreation Commission did look at this in January, and they are recommending that you adopt Draft Resolution A, approving the amendment as proposed to the Colony Park Master Plan. And that will conclude staff's report.
Thank you, Warren. Are there any council questions? Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes, I did not drive down there and try to figure out the site, but I wondered if there were handicapped parking spots that are located near the special needs playground site.
Yeah, this aerial photo right here is fairly current. I believe there's 3 or 4 handicapped parking spaces right in this location. This would be the area where the playground would go. So the existing parking lot with the flat paved surfaces seems like it would be ideal for accommodating this use.
Thank you.
Councilmember Moreno.
Warren, can you help me decipher, are H and I the initial playgrounds? Is that all one playground now? Are there going to be others, or is everything combining together?
On the original master plan, H and I indicated 2 types of playgrounds,
right?
One for, I think, under 5 and
yeah,
one for 5 to 12. We now indicate H and I in the same location here in area number 2. So depending on how we program the park, the idea would be to accommodate the full range of age groups from the very young toddlers through 12 years of age, because we want it to be an inclusive playground. There may be different uses
okay
within it where one...
The podium there, and state your name and let us tell us what you think.
Good evening, and thank you. My name is Janelle Allen, and I came before City Council. It was last May, and with the idea of some moms very passionate about wanting a special place for our children with special needs to play. And since then, we really have moved forward aggressively to really kind of try to build really a lot of interest. And it really wasn't hard, because when we put it out there, I felt right away that people were excited about this opportunity. And everyone we talked to in the city are really excited about this. And what I have with me here, I'd like to pass around. We have a little collage of some of our kids in our community, and I like to call them the unseen kids, because some of them, their disabilities inhibit them from being able to be in public very well, from handling a lot of sensory issues. A lot of them have, they don't have sense of danger, and it's hard for them to go to regular parks that aren't fenced in. Or some other places, it can be really hard for them. So we are putting together, we have a team working hard to put together contacts, to get some concept ideas, which one of the moms will show you here. But I wanted to pass this around, and it has some of our kids. There's just some brief information on statistics on our children, how many of them have autism, sensory problems, Down syndrome. My daughter has Down syndrome and autism. And we're a group, we call ourselves the Parents for Joy. And this is kind of like our mission statement here, and what we're wanting to do and see for our Atascadero. And so I'm going to pass this around real quick. I want to thank you. I really felt Atascadero just embraced this, and it really meant so much to me, because when I came, I had just recently lost a baby that was born with Down syndrome, and it was really hard. And I know that I just took this idea that wasn't originally my idea, it was from some of the other moms, and I thought, let's just see what Atascadero has to say about doing this, about bringing a park for our children. And I just want to say that it has blessed my heart so much. And I have four kids all together, and so I feel honored to raise them here in Atascadero, and it's such a neat community.
Well, thank you. Anybody else like to speak on this issue?
Some equipment that is accessible for everybody, not just special needs children, but the swings accommodate kids. They have a big harness that comes down over the top of them to keep them safe. There's a piece of equipment that a wheelchair can actually wheel onto so that kids that are hooked up to maybe oxygen tanks or are not able to transfer can go on this piece of equipment with other children. There's, I think, like six typical children can sit in it, and then the wheelchair. We have things that are for sensory, a lot of sensory issues where they can spin. Spinning is a huge one for our kids. Our main goal for it is to have the poured-in-place rubber through the entire playground so that it's accessible for everybody, and it's, you know, there's no sand, there's no wood chips, no one's getting hurt, it's squishy. And we want to have a fence around the entire thing so that nobody can take off and run away. This is just a concept that we actually received today here in the middle. We're working with a company called Game Time to kind of bounce some ideas around. And then these are just other pieces of the equipment. And we're just really excited to get this going and have so much support behind us. I mean, every person we talk to, they're just so on board with it. It's amazing. So if you guys want to take a look at it later, it's all there.
Yes, I'd like to see
thank
that.
You.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, there you go. Welcome.
Good evening. I have two children with special needs. My son, he's older. He has Asperger's. He's very high functioning, which is wonderful. My daughter has autism and cerebral palsy, and she's one of the ones that Sarah spoke about where she takes off. So the fence would be ideal for a child like her and a lot of others. And as Janelle and Sarah both mentioned, we have a lot of really exciting opportunities. We actually have 8 events already planned that we can go forward with to start fundraising, as well as about 5 or 6 pending that are in the works, and then a few more for future. So whenever you're ready, we are. We're excited. Thank you so much for the opportunity and for your support. We thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. Welcome.
I just wanted to share every chance I get about my son. I have 4 kids. This is Judah, and you saw him in May, but I'm going to show him off again. I have hope that the other 3 are safe while I'm chasing the other one, you know. And also, another mom that's not here brought up how exciting for Judah to be able to play with his friends that he sees at school, you know, plays on the playground, but to like, hey, let's have a play date, and for it to be safe for them, and they're going to grow up. You know, and they're going to have the next who knows how long together, and for them to have that opportunity to build that those friendships outside of school are just amazing. And it will be all-inclusive. All of my typical children will have fun and be able to play, and it's such a treasure for typical kids to get to know and learn about our kids with special needs. I used to be afraid of people with special needs, and then I had a baby, and I was like, oh, well, okay, let's get used to this. But I'm just excited about it, and like Janelle said, like, we haven't had to fight for it or push for it, so we just are really thankful for all of your support. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this issue? Welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? A little closer. I'm Charlene, and I'm from Parents Helping Parents. And we were asked by the women that spoke tonight and Josh Allen here to join them in supporting this cause. And so Parents Helping Parents, I'm the director, and I didn't even mention Parents Helping Parents is an organization, and we've been around since 1990. And we're a family resource center under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. So we were started by a group of parents, but we do have a statewide network, and the Early Start system offers support to families that have children that are newly diagnosed with special needs. So in 1990, a group of parents such as Janelle and Jennifer and Sarah formed a nonprofit, and later we became a nonprofit under United Cerebral Palsy Association of San Luis Obispo. And that happened in about 1996. So today we're under a larger organization that fully supports inclusive opportunities for children with disabilities. And the sky's the limit is kind of our motto at our office. So as I told you, we started with a group of parents, and Janelle, Sarah, and Jennifer are just a perfect example of what our agency can do. Our Family Resource Center is to create community awareness for individuals with disabilities. So again, this is just another great example of the work we do through parents that have children and find that they want to have their child reach their fullest potential and live in a community that is accepting and inclusive. So tonight, we just want to thank the City of Atascadero for listening to the needs of parents and for providing this opportunity to strengthen the community through your consideration of this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Welcome.
Hello. My name is Deborah Morosco McNulty. I work for Parents Helping Parents, but I have other hats. My son is 37 years old. He's quadriplegic. And over the years, it's been a real hard thing for me to take him with his sibling to parks and different areas. They said, oh, we've made it accessible, but it was never accessible for the two of them to be together. But as I take off that hat, let me add another one. My husband retired with 43 years military. I joined the Red Cross, and I'm also the military liaison for the Red Cross. When I put it out to my groups across the country that Atascadero is looking for a totally accessible park, one where people could go in with a wheelchair and be totally in to the park, they were so excited because we have the disabled military coming with their kids. And this way they could actually come with their wheelchairs and participate in the playground with the children. So I got a lot of big thumbs up and likes on, you know, the multimedia groups that they have out there now. And so I wanted you to know that Atascadero is being put on the map because of what you're doing here. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers like to speak to this issue? Well, welcome.
Good evening. Tom O'Malley. I'm a property owner in the neighborhood of this potential project. And I'd like to say something that is not said often enough here. Aren't they brilliant and don't they do a good job? Let's give them a hand. If you could put up the map that shows what we can do in our community. And since I don't have any of my fellow Kwanians here this evening, I did want to share that, as you know, Mark Derez, who's a member of Kiwanis, has got a lot of experience working with ADA issues. He's an architect in a wheelchair. He was very active in designing ADA-accessible pathways on my property, and he's worked all over the country in doing that. And I know he's very excited as a member of Kiwanis to participate in this project, and I did want to communicate the thankfulness of our neighborhood, really, that as well as I assure you are, Kiwanis has taken this on as their project to see that it gets built. That's their motto, is we build. And they are working on funding projects as well that will just support whatever you come up with in design. And as you know, we do an annual Mayor's Winemaker Dinner and have been able to raise money. Basically, we were able to raise enough funds to build the bandstand, which was, I believe, about a $100,000 project. And again, we're devoting all of the revenue from this coming winemaker dinner to this, and if it's not enough, we'll do it again. So just wanted to share that commitment and my thankfulness from our neighborhood that we're going to have a good area. I do want to mention, having been involved in with events at this location, we could use a lot more parking. There was a nice picture. It was actually a photo that overlaid the parking there, if you were able to find it. And it also showed the, yes, there's a lot of graveled area that if that was ever paved and added parking, it would make a huge difference. We have conferences with 500 people at this location, and I think there's also a need for additional ADA-accessible parking spaces. I think I've noticed with events that there was a need for more in any case, and I think the fact that we are producing something that's going to be so valuable on a much larger regional area, I would seriously look at doing more. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And would anyone else like to speak to this? Seeing none others, I just really want to say thank you so much for sharing your families with us and for sharing your passion and your vision for this project. Thank you. I can tell just by all of you talk about this, there's just that drive, there's that heart, there's that desire. This is just such a good thing for so many, in so many different levels.
Flex is, so you might be altering some of your program elements. That would need to really go back through Parks and Recreation to make that sort of change.
So if we approve this tonight, would that put a damper on future needs for parking, or we could consider that at a later date?
Yeah, this is the City Council's master plan, so we can bring it back as often as you want. And there are other areas in terms of the configuration of the softball fields we know probably aren't correct either. So it would probably be best to approve the amendment tonight, and then if you want us to explore another level of changes to it, direct us to do that as well.
Thank you. Yes, I have been to activities at the park, and there was not enough parking there, particularly handicapped. So I would agree with you, our community speaker here, Mr. O'Malley.
Any other council questions or a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the amendment to the 2014-1 to the Colony Park Master Plan.
Second.
Do we have to include also about the coming back for parking? Is that included now? Okay.
So you could include it in this motion or do it as a separate motion. Either way it works.
Okay. Did you want to include that in your motion?
That would be just fine.
I would accept the amendment.
Very good. So we have a motion by Councilmember Moreno and a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, public, and thank you for your input. And Mayor O'Malley, welcome back.
Well, Citizen O'Malley was negligent and he did run out of time, but I know he would want to have shared the thankfulness for the police chief. Gerald has been very active with this project from the very beginning, and you represent our city well. Thank you for your work on this. And we of the council would agree with Mr. O'Malley on that, I'm sure. Next item on the agenda is the fiscal year 2012-2013 audit, and that is going to be presented by Administrative Services Director Jerry Rangel. And before you begin, though, I'm going to speak on behalf of all agrees with that. So you have a hard act to follow, your own act, but if you would go ahead and do the review of this and introduce our auditing firm that's with this as well. Thank you.
I will. Thank you so much, Mayor. I appreciate that very much, and to all the council members, thank you. I did want to introduce Adam Geis. He's with Moss, Levy & Hartsheim. He was our lead auditor, and so he will be here to answer any questions after the presentation if you have anything you'd like to follow up with him on. So tonight, we're just going to kind of highlight some of the key results. There's 140 beautiful pages of the audit. I'm certainly not going to go through every one of them, but it is listed on our website. You can find it in City Hall in addition to being in your agenda package tonight. So It's out there. I encourage you to read all of it. It's fabulous. So as I was saying, Moss, Levy & Hartzheim was our auditor. They are an independent audit firm based out of Santa Maria. Adam Geis is here to help us out with this if we need it. The auditor issued an unqualified opinion, or what we call a clean opinion. That means that they agreed that the financial statements were presented fairly and in compliance with accounting principles. So that's a good thing. The year ended with a general fund balance of about $8 million. This is an increase over last year of about $1.5 million. Much of this increase, however, was due to one-time revenues, and which we'll go into shortly. So this is a table of comparison revenues. It's from 11-12 to fiscal year 12-13. This table is also in your agenda package on page 32, if it's easier to reference there. I just wanted to point out a couple of revenues here that show up, those one-time benefits that we were talking, that I was referencing a few minutes ago. So one of these is the Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund, or RPTTF. It's a little bit easier to say. As you may recall, this is the city's piece of the redevelopment money that the former redevelopment agency remitted as part of the dissolution of redevelopment. And while we expect to see some additional RPTTF in the future, it's just only going to be a small fraction of what the 12-13 amount is at $2.3 million. This amount was deposited into the general fund and has been included in the updated seven-year forecast. So here's a graph to kind of see the 12-13 general fund comparison with the prior year. So kind of the same information in graph form. The darker bars on the right-hand side are the 12-13 results. And again, you'll see that second bar, the purple bar right there, that's all by itself. That's the RPTTF, so kind of the obvious one there. And in addition to that, you see the service charges are a little stronger than some of the other categories. And that's due to really a couple of things. The zoo gift shop money is in there, so they had their first full year of operations, so that's included. Mutual aid activity is in there, so that's included. And development activity that's been up, that's been moving in a positive direction, so that's included as well. And while it's terrific that we've had increases in permit fees, in and of themselves, they are not going to really increase the bottom line. As we talked about in strategic planning, it's a kind of a cost, and the revenues are there just to cover the costs, essentially. So there's really, it's a net zero end result. And as we would expect, generally across the board, most of the revenues are showing gradual but positive growth. So it's kind of a slow grow out of this economy. Property tax revenue. This is a comparison of property tax revenues, excluding, of course, the RPTTF. And as you can see, we're moving forward, but at a very slow pace. So as you may recall also from our discussion at the strategic planning sessions, fiscal year 12-13, revenues on secured property taxes were about $40,000 higher in 12-13 than they were in 11-12. $40,000, it's not much in the big scheme of things. It's good, it's positive, but you know, it's really going to take us a while to grow out of this, so we just have to have a little bit more patience. Comparative expenses. So these are general fund expenses, and you can see they're up over last year, but still came in under budget. Employee services included a higher level of mutual aid activity, as we were talking about before the revenue showed up. This is the expense piece that offsets that. There was some employee payoffs, increased benefit costs off over time. And then that plan kind of got modified, so we got three kind of freebie years with not paying into this kind of back payment. So at the end of 12-13, we went ahead and made this liability payment in an amount of about $718,000. So we're square with our payment there. The net income for 12-13 was a positive 1.5, as we previously discussed. And the fact that it's positive is terrific. But again, it's because of the one-time bump-ups we had in the RPTTF and the revenue from the county refund. And then, of course, we're offset by the insurance. But if it wasn't for those couple of items, we would be using reserves again this year. So we have to kind of keep that in mind as we move forward. Our current 7-year projection shows that we will continue to depend on general fund reserves through the year, fiscal year 16-17. As far as the report goes, the actual document, at the beginning of this document is the auditor's opinion, unqualified, of course, which is good. The next section, there's a management discussion and analysis. We also call it an MD&A. It has kind of the executive summary of some of the key points of the report. And I did want to point out also, we did find a typo on page 8 of the report. And it does read, governmental activities during the year decrease the net city's net position by $3.9 million. That should really say governmental activities during the year increased the city's net position by $3.9 million. So I do apologize for that, and we'll get that cleaned up. Adam's already given me the green light on I'm getting it all cleaned up, and we'll get that fixed up on the website copy as well. Let's see. After that, we have the combined statements. And then on page 15, again, you'll see that $3.9 million increase on the statement of activities. And also on that statement, you'll see a prior period adjustment of negative $3.7 million. And this is to account for the PERS side fund. There's been some changes in how we record that. So this year, for the first year, there's been some alterations in what the standards are. So governmental accounting standards now suggest that you show that on your statements. So that is there as a prior period adjustment, and it will be on the liability page as well. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And again, Adam Geis is here as well.
Thank you. Any council member questions? I would like to invite our auditor, since we're paying you anyway, we might as well ask a question or two. If you would come to the lectern, maybe give a little overview of what the audit is, because this is fairly standard and routine, and maybe you could just share a Sure. little bit about this process and what you found.
Sure. So as she stated before, my name is Adam Geis, and I was the manager for the city's audit this year, and have been for the last 2 years as well. So what we're doing in our audit process, we come out twice a year. The first time we come out, we're looking at the city's internal controls, looking at how your disbursements process works, how you pay your bills. We're looking at the receipts the city takes in from all the various departments. I know we went out to several departments this year, including the police and Parks and Recreation. And then we also look at payroll and then other higher threat items such as, you know, credit cards or employee reimbursements and that kind of stuff. So we look at that. We had no issues with anything this year. We have no findings to report coming out of looking at the city's controls. And then when we come out the second time at year end, we're looking at the city's balances, and we do testing on the balances and make sure that the balances are fairly stated. And I just wanted to say that I met with Mayor O'Malley when I came out here, and we had a good discussion about what was going on in the city. And all the staff that I've worked with this year have been very helpful. Jerry, in her new position, was very helpful in getting everything together and writing up the final financial statements.
Well, thank you.
Any questions from you?
Yes, council questions. And before we go to council questions, I do want to comment that I think we have a very strong fiscal team in the city of Atascadero. We do have all of our council members. I know Councilman Kelly, Councilman Fonzie, myself have years of experience in the private sector and public sector, and our two newer council members, Ms. Rangel, has done an outstanding job. So I'm very confident in our community. We've got a strong finance team all across the board. And with that, I'm going to go ahead. Ms. Moreno, our chair of our finance committee.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Adam. And I think you've answered my question, but you do mention the internal controls report that's going to come out. And in speaking with Rochelle, it looks like there are still a couple of small federal-type compliance issues to go over. But I think what you said is there are no internal control issues. So if the letter were issued today without those other items, it seems like there would be no problems to report. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're actually coming out in 2 days on Thursday to look at the federal compliance.
Okay.
So that's the only remaining piece of last year's audit.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was pleased to see that we're under the budget of expenses by almost $500,000 for the year. So that's our conservative budgeting. And I remember city manager talking about that last year. Do a very good job with that.
Very good job. And we recognize, though, that has come because our staff have really voluntarily looked for areas of reductions and have really essentially paid a price that we're well aware of, we're thankful for, but we want to acknowledge that our staff have really gone the extra mile the last couple of years to bring this budget in so strong.
Yes, they have.
Any other council questions? Then I'm going to open it up to the public. If anyone would like to share on this item, you would be welcome. Seeing none approach, we'll bring it back to council. And what do you need from us, staff?
Just a review and accept is all.
That is easy to do. Consider it reviewed and accepted. Thank you very much, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, guys.
And I do want to say to members of our public, we appreciate you here all the time. Don't feel socially obligated to sit through every item. We just want you to not feel bad if you decide to head home here as we continue working. That's not a problem. We're used to it. It's been suggested we take a quick break, and we'll do that now. Thank you. Is Strategic Planning 2013 update on council goals?
Thank you, Mayor and council members. As you just said, the item we have before you is the update on our strategic planning goals for 2013 through 2015. As you know, the council adopted these goals at strategic planning session in January 2012, and this was in preparation for our two-year budget cycle. As part of strategic planning, council sets its goals for the following two fiscal year, and then the budget immediately follows, allocating resources to those priorities that council sets. So this is an update on those goals. We're about 8 months into the cycle, and just trying to do an update. We've made a lot of progress. This is, I think, a very good news item as council set these goals, and we're achieving them. The priorities that council set for fiscal year 2013-15 were to promote the Atascadero Lake Park, Pavilion, Veterans Memorial, and Zoo as an event center. It was to pursue more connection between the city council and community, to promote common sense regulations and reform, to promote environmental stewardship, to pursue economic development, and to provide high-quality public service, public safety services. So some very lofty goals, and I think we're starting to make progress on them. The first one is to promote the Atascadero Lake Park Pavilion Veterans Memorial, which included items such as achieving reaccreditation of the zoo, increasing marketing for the lake park, increasing the parking capacity, and improving the facilities generally at the lake park. On achieving reaccreditation of the zoo, the accreditation inspectors were out in November. We did get a task list, but there was a very short task list. I was thought it was very positive. On the types of things that they were starting to criticize were very minor and nitpicky. We will appear before their board in March in Memphis to hear whether or not we have been accredited, but I think their to-do list is doable. Things that we did do to work on accreditation is we have replaced the lemur exhibit, the roof, and resurfaced all the walls, so that's a brand new exhibit. We have the new flamingo exhibit that we opened in July. We removed the old flamingo alligator pond, and that is now ready for a new animal. We're in the process of reconstructing security fence on Pismo Avenue, and we're also in the process of constructing a new wallaby exhibit. And this is going to be some backbone and infrastructure that needs to be in place that will allow us to get some other donations that have been on the books waiting for that to come in line. So we're excited about that and excited for the future. One of the other goals was to increase marketing and media exposure of the Pavilion Lake Park and Zoo. We have increased our presence and spotlighting of the zoo and lake park both on Facebook and on the Visit Atascadero website. We produced a zoo video promoting the zoo that has been seen but it's both on our website, on Facebook, and at Movies in the Park, and we're looking to expand and push that out a little bit more. I think it's a very positive piece. And we're looking for opportunity for events at the zoo, including moving the sand volleyball pit to Paloma to allow for an event lawn or tent area right there. That'll be a little bit longer range, probably see that about a year from now, but then we're starting to look at that. Of course, we have the Zoo Green parking lot. The construction of the grant-funded Zoo Green parking lot is complete. The city received over $560,000 in state funding. The project added 52 parking spaces and additional landscaping, and the project is a low-impact development demonstration project. We've had several lake park improvements, obviously including the Kiwanis Bandstand and other things since the implementation, and we have a CDBG barrier removal project that's in the works. New walkways, an accessible picnic table, improved signage, an accessible pathway from the Faces of Freedom Memorial all the way to the Ranger House. It is currently out to bid, and so that'll be being constructed soon. And of course, we had our lake dredging project. The city obtained approval from the Army Corps of Engineers, State Fish and Wildlife, and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which was a maze in and of itself to get all those permits so that we could dredge the lake. We removed over 7,000 cubic yards of sediment from the south end of the lake, and the sediment removal will improve water quality. Once it rains, we need Mother Nature to do her part. Add up to 4 feet of depth near the island and created an additional 5 acre feet of storage. We also added 3 fountains this summer to the lake to improve lake water quality and help with the aeration. Ranger House improvements. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to go out to the Ranger House. It's absolutely beautiful. Our building maintenance staff did a fantastic job on this. There's new and improved meeting space and expanded wedding potential uses. We paint textured all of the interior finishes. We made the bathroom ADA compliant. We remodeled the Centennial Committee. We had a winemaker dinner or mayor's dinner. Elegant evening, grand opening of City Hall, reinstallation of the Wrestling Bacchants, Colony Days, Joe Schwartz, a number of wonderful centennial events, and I think it was a fantastic, positive year. Of course, the grand reopening was the culmination of a lot of years of hard work, and that was a great centennial event. And then other council and community connections include televising of the council meetings and broadcasting the meetings on KPRL, increased press releases. We've been really working to try and push those out, make sure that those get out not only to the press, but Facebook, Visit Atascadero, wherever we can put them on. We have the Council Corner articles that we have been doing, mayor and council appearances on KPRL and Charter Connections, a lot of trying to get information about the city, about the council, out to the public. We also, another goal was to promote common sense regulations and reform, where we're really looking to encourage county, state, and federal governments to reduce regulations to have common sense upgrades to updates to our city codes and to adapt Regional Water Quality Control Board stormwater and septic regulations to fit Atascadero. The City Council updated the zoning. Staff has remained very involved with state and local governmental agencies. We've developed the stormwater and on-site regulations at Regional Water Quality Control Board and State Water Resources Board. We participate in local technical committees and have cooperative legal representatives Sacramento, again, all trying to reduce those regulations. And with that, we also work with the League on policy committees, Channel County Division meetings, attending League events, trying to make sure that what is passed in Sacramento or other places meets what we need here in Atascadero. Here with our own updates, we did the common sense code updates recently. We changed the front yard setbacks to allow some more flexibility. We changed it so there's no tree protection required for septic repairs, allowed indoor recreational use in the industrial areas, allowed some mobile food vendors, expanded some of our cargo container regulations. We have more flexible fire sprinkler requirements for occupancy changes. Again, these were all things that you guys asked for and then were able to adopt. We had the 2013 California, and we have been improving our turnaround time, coincidentally, also. We have the new plan templates, more common sense reform, and in response to the contractor roundtable, the city developed new residential detail and note templates that can be incorporated into building plan sets and speed up the plan check and permitting process. This communications and customer services, the community development team has been meeting with, along with myself and others, to regularly discuss ways to improve customer service and communications. And so those are all working on that common sense regulations. Promoting environmental stewardship. We have our tree planting at the wastewater plant and other sites. The loss of Corey Meyer, our city arborist and local tree expert, he retired last spring, and we're still trying to find a way to replace him to get that tree giveaway going again. But we do expect to get that back up and going. It's kind of on a short hiatus as we try and replace the irreplaceable. We had Creek Cleanup Day in September, and the CCCs cleaned Atascadero Creek behind City Hall. We got high marks from the Regional Water Quality Control Board on the implementation of our in-house stormwater program, and we've had a lot of trail developments and meetings along the creek, so basically more eyes on the creek are a cleaner, healthier creek usually. We have our transit center that opened. The new transit center was completed and now serves El Camino Shuttle, RTA Route 9, Amtrak buses, park and ride parking spaces along Capistrano. It's a positive thing for the community. And, of course, the Tesla station. The Tesla refueling station is the only one in Slo County and the only one within 80 miles, and it's right here in Atascadero. And while we're talking alternate energy sources, the city did issue permits for 104 photovoltaic systems in 2013 that will generate approximately 0.5 megawatts of electricity. Just 2 weeks ago, Council approved a climate action plan that far exceeds state greenhouse gas emission reduction requirements. It's very aggressive, very environmentally friendly. Another goal was to pursue economic development. The Office of Economic Development has been refocused under Warren Frace's leadership. New staff members have been added, and OED is focused on the council's economic. Style House Furniture moved into the previously vacant Deku Lumber Building, and the Old Players Restaurant Building has been renovated, or is in the process of being renovated, and will be ready for a new tenant soon. Council took action on the Dove Creek commercial property, allowing that vacant property to also begin moving forward. And, of course, we have Walmart in the annex. We are in the process of, we're in litigation regarding the appeal. The Save Atascadero appealed the finding of the original judge, and so we are moving that forward. It's just slow.
Now, Save Atascadero is the organization that was formerly opposed Walmart, correct?
Yes, that is my understanding.
Thank you.
Yeah, I could add to that that the we filed the city's brief in that case last week, February 6th, and the brief from the opposed Walmart Save Atascadero group is due in the next 20 days. And then after the briefing is completed, and that would be the last brief to be filed, the court would schedule a hearing at the Court of Appeal. And I believe that will probably be held in the city of Ventura. And I will let you know when that hearing is set.
Very good. If you wouldn't mind, I think it might be helpful to have a just a one-page summary of the process and where we are in that stage and what's next. Because I get asked that often, and it's hard to remember now, where are we at in this stage of developments? It seems to be pretty predictable by everyone else, the folks that oppose Walmart and Walmart, but we don't always realize the process. So I think we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I can do that now.
Moving on to goals, you also had a goal of providing high-quality public safety services. And I think, again, fantastic progress by our police and fire department along with others. We have a radio system replacement is currently in progress. The PD voter repeater project is complete. New handheld radios have been purchased for fire. And the fire department voter repeater project is scheduled. We have installed also new MDC modems for fire departments, so a lot going on there on infrastructure. Partnerships. The partnership with the Lighthouse Foundation continues. Among other projects, the group hosted the first Lighthouse Reality Tour, demonstrating the class of 2013 had 28 students, and there's a new CERT class currently going on. Mark Russo came to talk about it at our last city council meeting. We got new donations to the DRT, and that includes a fully enclosed metal building to house that, which was a very generous donation. And speaking of generous donations, we received a very generous donation from the Bertha Schultz Trust, and we'll be putting that to good use also. More on community involvement, we have a fuel management and road clearance grant, fire prevention through chipping, the CERT training, practical hands-on training, and new fire code adoption. We had a city employee and family safety and disaster prep training, emergency preparedness training, disaster training drill is scheduled for April. Council will be participating in that drill. And firefighter stay alive training, so lots of training. Focus on core services. We have restored the traffic unit. The juvenile detective position has been developed. We have an aggressive animal ordinance that you guys passed. Quarterly EMS quality improvement and quality insurance. That's where we review the quality of our service on calls. That is now in place. And, of course, fire prevention and communicating that fire prevention and what we can do in our high risk area is always a focus. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. That and the department heads who help pull this all together, I'm sure we'll be able to answer anything you need.
Thank you. And I would like to go through those items 1 through 6 when we come back to make any deliberation. But at this point, any questions by anyone on any item is fine. So I see no one hitting the lights yet. I see Councilwoman Fonzie.
Very good. If we're not talking generally, can we talk specifically now, Mr. Mayor?
Any item, yeah, but I think we will still go to public comment before we start any deliberation recommendations.
Let's go ahead and do that first then.
Okay. If there are no questions for staff, let's open it up to the public. Any member of the public wishing to speak on any of these items, seeing only a smile in the audience, will close public comment, bring it back to council. And what I would like to do is go through these items.
In terms of priority.
Correct.
I think it's important that the public understand that these are our goals, but we're not favoring one above the other.
Thank you for making that point. We should have had that more general discussion. Any other general items that apply to anything? I accept that as well. Otherwise, any other comments about goal number one? How about goal number two, pursue more connection between the city council and community? Go ahead.
Well, I understand that there may be some conflicts with the council corner, and this was brought up by our city attorney because we're in an election year, and I was wondering if we could get a little clarification if we'll be able to go ahead with the council corner articles during this particular year.
Well, a question has been asked. I'll turn it over to the city attorney.
Sure. There are some concerns with respect to the council corner articles in terms of making sure that they are written in a way that is consistent with the law. A few of those areas that we need to be aware of include the mass mailing rules. Basically, what that means is that there cannot be any public funds or resources that are utilized as part of the writing of the article, because if these newspapers are mailed to more than 200 individuals, then it becomes a mass mailing, and you cannot have, under those circumstances, anything more than $50 under the government code to have that newspaper sent out. So that's one limitation. So basically, to summarize that one, the articles should be written by council members without spending public funds, including, that would include city staff time, supplies, equipment, or other public resources. So that's one rule. A second rule that we should be aware of is the Brown Act. If there's an article that's been written by a particular council member, it is possible under the government code for there to be a serial meeting if there are a series of communications that are exchanged between council members, and those could take different forms. For example, a council member could express an opinion in an article. The person who would be affected by that particular item is entitled to your independent evaluation at the time that the matter comes before you. It cannot be prejudged. As you all know what the public process is, that there would be a staff report prepared that we put on the agenda. The item is brought then before the council with a opportunity for the public to have input on that item. Then there can be council discussion, deliberation, and a decision. That's the process of government. That's the way our Brown Act works. And it needs to be recognized that that process could potentially be affected if the article is expressing, especially if it expresses an opinion about that matter that may come before you. So those are three of the items that need to be taken into account when council members write articles. So that was my short version of the explanation.
Well, thank you for the short version.
So would this also apply to, I know that we have one planning commissioner that also has a regular article. Would that, those same strictures apply to him or
yes.
her?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Very good. So since we navigated as a council through these landmines up to this point, are we safe to continue with this even though it's an election year, or what is your best advice?
Well, an election year doesn't change the rules. I think it's just a matter of being sensitive to the fact that in an election there's obviously situations where candidates may use different means of communication. You can clearly have, I believe there's a campaign candidate forum that the occurs at the city. Is that correct, Marcia?
We have, yes, actually this year the city isn't going to put one on ourselves, but the chamber and I think the League of Women Voters are both going to hold candidate forums. So there will be forums, yes.
Certainly, council members have the opportunity to express opinion. Candidates have an opportunity to express opinions during those forums, including items that may come before the council. There's exceptions under the law that allow you to express opinions. There's a caveat that I would insert on that is that you wouldn't want to express your opinion in such a way that you are committing yourself to a voting in a part on the item. You haven't listened to the public comment on the item that might come before you. So if you're saying something like that in July or August and then the item comes before you as a council member in November, you've prejudged the item by having made a commitment and as to how you're going to vote. But that doesn't mean that you can't express an opinion. You could say, for example, that this Project X that is currently under discussion, I have some concerns about that project. Those concerns include traffic or air quality or noise or, you know, whatever those concerns might be, and you can express that. But I would suggest that you perhaps qualify that by saying, of course, when the item comes before me as a voting member of the council, I will certainly review carefully all the materials that have been presented and listen to the public comment and make my decision at that time. So I haven't tried to give you the exact words that you should use because there's not any particular magical words to it, but the concept is that during even campaigns or writing articles, you don't want to take positions that are cast in stone because applicants on projects or whatever the item might be are entitled to have you hear it at the time it's presented to you.
Thank you.
On that item, and I would just add, you've touched on a number of areas that are of concern, and I think one area is, of course, utilizing any city or staff resources. My concern is that it would be hard not to if the city is actually setting up this forum with the newspaper saying that we are going to have a city council forum, and just by the city taking an action of setting up something like that, they have utilized resources. So technically, you may be in a position, someone could say, that you are using city resources. Personally, I am not going to participate in that activity, and just is my own decision to just have an abundance of caution, recognizing, as all of us do, I think other council members have, if you write a letter, the newspaper is going to print it. And I think you are free as an individual to write an article or anything and express an opinion, as we've heard from the
staff resources, you know, really, you know, maybe calling and setting up or saying, you know, hey, you know, Jerry, Rochelle, is this number correct? Do I have the right number? Something like that. I've been writing on the budget, for example. How is that different than using staff resources to send out a press release about what's going on in the city? And the reason I ask that is because this was never about promoting us as a council. It has always been about us communicating with the public about things that are going on with the city. I remember one of Councilmember Kelly's was about the homeless issue in town and what Atascadero does and the HSOC that he's involved with. The mayor's done environmental stewardship. And so these are things that if people aren't at meetings, if they're not, you know, they're busy, you know, they work, they have kids, they're not coming to meetings, they're not keeping up with what's happening at city council. And so in my way of thinking, it was a way for us to communicate to people that maybe don't know all of these things, but can read something like that from, for example, from Councilmember Kelly on the homeless situation, say, wow, I didn't know that Atascadero was doing all of that and what's going on. And so help me understand the difference between staff resources for a press release and just some of those innocuous type things I mentioned for maybe checking a number or setting up the article in the newspaper.
One, it's not council directed for a press release, I'm guessing, but do we want to have the city attorney weigh in on that? Well, since we're paying you by the hour anyway.
And I'm here. Well, there may be a fine line between a press release and a regular article. My understanding is press releases are usually issued by the city and not by individual council members. So under those circumstances, I think that a city is certainly has the opportunity to have staff. If council gives direction that they wish to have a press release issued on a certain item, staff can work on drafting that press release, and that press release is issued by the city. So that, I think, is a little bit different than newspaper articles written by individual council members.
But we are the city, too.
Well, you're not the city. You're the city council members. The city is actually a municipal corporation. So you are individual council members, and you comprise them to more than 200 individuals, the other requirements that I said before. And more than $50 is spent on it of public funds. And I said that that would include staff time, supplies, equipment, and other public resources, that the risk is it becomes a mass mailing. And so I'm advising against getting into that situation. The best way to avoid that risk is not to use any city resources.
Understand.
I see we have Mr. Sturdivant.
Very much. Just a question about resources. When it comes to us submitting our articles, we submit them to the city. The city does, you know, whether they're looking at it and correcting and then turning it in, doesn't that take time and money as well? Is that considered part of this city cost?
Well, I don't know what procedure you used for submitting the article. I thought the article went to the newspaper, so I don't know if how it gets there, if it's emailed to them or what the process is.
I think right now the process is that the city council members will submit it to city staff, and then city staff submit it to the newspaper.
Well, that would seem to me to be a minimal involvement by staff if all they're doing is transmitting the article. I mean, you send it to the staff member and whoever it is that's in charge of this, and that staff member then forwards it on to the newspaper saying, you know, here's the article from Councilmember X. That doesn't appear to me to be a significant involvement by city staff. It's probably less than the $50 limit, assuming that takes a matter of a minute.
Well, I would suggest, again, I think this is an area that everyone needs to think through themselves with this, because you only know how much staff involvement there is in what you may be doing. And there's a lot of fine lines that you could be researching something for that's really pertinent to what you have before you at a council meeting, or that same information could be used in an article that you end up doing on your own. It's a fine line, and really it just depends what the public decides in viewing us. And so I think it's good to have this discussion of awareness of some of the technicalities on this, and then you just have to make Councilman Fonzie.
I just wanted to reiterate, I think it is actually a very good tool to communicate with the public. I think the articles are important. I understand that there is an element of risk, and I just wanted to review that again before we start up our new year and keep it on our goals.
I think we have reviewed it. Any other discussion on item goal 2, pursue more connection between the city council and community? I think we can move on then to item 3, promote common sense regulations and reform. Any questions or comments on that item?
I'd just like to make a comment. I think staff has just done a fantastic job in trying to streamline the process and making things as easy as possible. I was contacted by a longtime builder in town here the other day, and just amazed that he had submitted a permit for a house and got it back in 2.5 weeks. So I think that's a great goal that we set, and I think you guys have probably have exceeded it. And to keep me happy in that area, you're doing a good job. Thank you.
Yes, and I do want to take that opportunity to thank our Councilman Kelly and Councilman Fonzie for their work on the Design Review Committee, along with Planning Commissioners. It's been a lot of input, I think, working with staff to help think some of those things through, and also the forums we've had with the building community, getting their input and listening. And I think I agree with Councilman Kelly. Staff has done a good job on that. Councilman Fonzie.
I just wanted to reinforce that. One of the things that was near and dear to my heart from the time that I was elected was getting rid of some of the ordinances and regulations that I thought were silly, such as fence heights and others. And I'm glad to see them gone. I think this was a positive step. It was a good review in the public eye. And I think most people in Atascadero truly appreciated it.
I see no more comments on item four. We'll move on to item four, promote environmental stewardship. I will make a couple of comments. One, I should have mentioned under the Lake Park Zoo item, but I've had a number of constituents suggest to me that it'd be such a great time to clean up the island.
There's some nesting bird issues in those trees, and so they had a very hands-off approach to that area. It's not to say it couldn't be done in the future, but it would definitely take some permitting and a little more extensive outreach to those agencies to get those kind of approvals. And it would involve some consultant reviews. We'd have to get biologists out there to review what's out there on the island.
Well, thank you. I'm not surprised. And as I always say, can you imagine E.G. Lewis trying to build a road to Morro Bay today, or even building that lake? We would still be in environmental impact reviews, but we have abided by the law. Thank you. And we're very thankful we did able to get the dredging done anyway. Councilwoman Moreno?
Along the line of talking about the lake cleanup day that we did last year, I think I've heard from people they'd like to do that again. Is that something that we're considering? Have the Friends of the Lake contacted the city about doing that again?
Yeah, there's really a lot of great energy with that group that has formed. And our thought was to do it the same day that we do Creek Cleanup Day, is that we would just make Atascadero Lake one of the work areas, because we have always have a great turnout for that Creek Cleanup Day, and we just combine it.
Okay, great idea. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you. A few comments again on environmental stewardship. I was very proud that we've taken an active role, and I often say other folks talk about it, we actually do it. Just like our climate action plan, the fact is we've got a lot of realistic items that we can do in our community, and I'm proud that we've taken a lead on, I know even New Times, when they reviewed solar panel permits, we were number one in terms of lower cost and being able to expedite that. And so many things we've done in that area, I think we can be proud of. I just wanted to suggest a couple areas we might look at, not to invest any staff time in, but if opportunities present themselves, that we pay special attention to water conservation opportunities. And I know this has been a discussion at the Regional Water Quality Control Board level of looking at how to expand gray water systems. There's a lot of discussion in the community in the engineering field of water conservation, looking at rainwater harvesting, rain gardens, capturing water from the rooftop, recycling water. A lot of times there's different ways of doing it, and they like to hear if opportunities come up in those areas, if technology changes and those things become cost-effective, that be brought to council or planning commission, and we look at how we can help expedite, especially in these years of maybe a real water needs. I think we could, again, be leaders in that water conservation area. And I think maybe getting an update, I think we were really up with the recommendations the water company was making to us on some of the water timing controllers and the sensing the water levels in the lawns, some of those areas that we've really gone the extra mile on. And I would appreciate just a little review of that at some future council meeting. Are we doing everything we can as a city to help out where it's cost effective and let our community know that we are doing those things as well? Any other comments just on the environmental stewardship item? We'll move on then to pursuing economic development. Any comments on that? I do think the council agrees that Mr. Frace has done an outstanding job with piecing together a lot of resources throughout the city. And I just look at the design work you've done over the years around our city. And it's our city is phenomenally looking better. I just remember an abandoned gas station just right up the street here, broken out windows, weeds growing through the parking lot, egress, ingress, all confused, multiple property owners not agreeing on anything, and one day it turned into a rejuvenated project right there where Rite Aid is on the corner. I think that's a phenomenal project that you really have fingerprints all over. And there's so many projects like that around town that just simply would not have had, Warren, unless you put your design work to work for us. So on behalf of the council, we do really appreciate what you've done over the years.
Thank you.
Seeing no other comments on that item, I think we are at the, public safety. And, boy, a lot of accomplishments there. Any comments by council? Councilman Fonzi.
Yes, when we were at strategic planning this year, we talked about having a higher profile with a public outreach regarding fire emergencies and fire safety because we believe this is going to be a continuing drought possibility and the fire danger will be high. So I was hoping that we could get some additional bullets on what you were planning on doing.
Just because there's a drought does not mean necessarily it's going to be a worse than normal fire season. I think we're learning, if you live in California, it's likely we're going to have wildland fires any time of the year and that we always need to be prepared and vigilant.
Thank you. It sounds like there's council consensus to come back with something on that. Would you? Okay. If you could then work with our city manager, and I think certainly way before we get to fire season, I think it'd be nice. And if you would work with Councilwoman Fonzi, who's got some suggestions on that, and help guide in that presentation, that would be great. Any other? Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I'd just like to compliment both the fire chief and the police chief. I think it's outstanding. The involvement that both of the departments have within the city with the CERT program that we're putting on that'll lead down to possibly assisting in some emergency down the road, and the police department getting involved in the lighthouse project, which I think is very, very important. And it's just nice to see everybody out there in a positive way helping the community. And our police department is just doing a quality job of catching the bad guys in this town and putting them away. And I want to compliment Gerald and his crew on that. And I don't know what you're doing, Kurt, but we're not getting any fires, so keep up the good work.
That's the old no news is good news. Well said, Councilman Kelly. Thank you. I think that works through our goals, and I think that is just a receive and file item as well. So let's move on then to our last item on the agenda, Community Development Strategic Planning Update. We weren't able to get this report during strategic planning. We had so many things we were working on, and Warren Frace, you are going to make that presentation now.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This is a follow-up, kind of an update in terms of what's going on with permit activity and other issues in the Community Development Department. I think we can officially announce that at least in Atascadero, the recession is over. This chart here shows your building permit trends for about the last 10 years. This last year, we issued 171 residential permits, which is about what we were doing back in the peak during 2005-2006. You can see the slow years, 2008 through 2011, in 2012 that were also processed. So we did a total of 933 permits last year, which is getting back toward where we were at the peak years. Building inspections, same thing. We've seen those pick up dramatically, especially just in the last 6 months. So the building inspections, that's kind of the last thing to pick up, but we have seen that pick up quite a bit. We're using some contract inspection services right now to keep up because we are short one inspector due to a retirement and a little bit of reorganization within the department. We do have a new building inspector, too, that is scheduled to start next week. So we do expect to start getting somebody up to speed, and that will definitely help with that. We've talked with the council a number of times about your dormant permit program. This is a list of all the, or a map, of all the projects that were approved during the boom about 10 years ago. So we did a lot of development entitlement during that period of time, and then most of these projects basically stopped during the recession. So we did set up the dormant permit program. The idea was to keep the entitlements and approvals for these projects active so that these projects could be quickly restarted, and that's panned out very nicely. This list right here is the, I guess, seven or eight biggest projects that we've been currently working on. They comprise about 440 units, and these are all under construction at this time. There's another level of dormant permits that we're starting to see interest in now. So there seems to be a lot of interest in finding and developing some of these projects. So these were the easiest ones to get started. There's another level that weren't as far along but still have entitlements, and now we're starting to see a lot of interest in those as well. Of course, you also have the Eagle Ranch specific plan. We're currently in the middle of preparing the EIR on that project. We do expect that the draft EIR will be released for public review later this year. So our consultant has been working on that very diligently. It's really getting down to the final drafts at this point. So we do expect that that will be ready for review in the foreseeable future. As Rochelle mentioned, we did do a lot of work on the Common Sense Code update, so I won't go into this once again. One of the issues that we are dealing with is unpermitted construction. That tends to be something that does consume a lot of staff time. We are obviously limited just with the increase in permit levels, or with it usually requires a lot of higher level staff to be involved in working through those issues, and some of those can take over years, some of them, to resolve. So that is an issue. We definitely are encouraging people to try to go through the permit process. We think in the long run it's a lot better for the public to use the process. We've really focused on trying to get the permit process simplified to the greatest degree as possible, so that it's as user-friendly and as easy to navigate as we can make it. So we're definitely trying to get the word out to encourage people to try to use the permit process, because when you try to go around it and you get stuck sometimes, it can be very time-consuming and expensive. Rochelle did mention also that the Office of Economic Development has been reorganized and refocused. We've had a lot of success in the last year. We mentioned the Hoff property, and then just last week we approved a Planning Commission Pacific Coast RV. So that's going to be replacing Macy Homes mobile home sales there next to Michael Frederick's yard. So we do expect that that's going to be a pretty good sales tax generator for us, and we hope to have them opened up in March. So that's a nice little new project for us. Just in terms of overall revenue issues, Jerry hit on this, I think. One of our issues is we are increasing in our permit activity levels, and that is generating more fees. One of our issues is that those existing fees haven't been updated for about 10 years. So as a result, even though we're collecting more fees, those fees aren't keeping up with what our staff costs are. So we're really not catching up as much as we could. We do believe that it does make sense to take a look at those fees and make sure that we are capturing what our costs are to the degree possible. We've also done some other things in terms of trying to increase the number of in-house plan checks we do. But to the degree that we don't have as much resources for staffing, it limits some of these things that we can do to encourage people or help them through the process, like providing that extra level of assistance at the counter, faster turnarounds, that sort of thing. So you have two types of revenue sources that come through the development process. You have your permit fees, which are your cost recovery fees. Those are the fees that cover your staff time. So there's a permit fee for inspections, and then there's also plan check fee. Those are your two main. So I wanted to check in real quick with the council just on commercial appearance issues. I know when we did our tour of projects, we did the banner bingo game and kind of talked about what the El Camino corridor looked like. I know we had a lot of different opinions about that. I think what staff's trying to find out is trying to get an idea from the council in terms of what is the expectation for how El Camino Real looks, because we have a lot of different staff people that touch this, and we get lots of calls and inquiries from the public, and staff honestly doesn't have a real good idea to know when to enforce or when not to enforce. So what we are hoping to do is have just a little bit of a discussion here and see if we can at least kind of come to some sort of common understanding about where we're trying to get to in terms of appearance and appearance levels along El Camino Real. So this is just something that happened downtown, I think, a week or two ago. Somebody, you know, bought a bunch of new feather flags and stuck them on the building, and these are popping up more and more. And I think the more you see these as a business, the more other businesses tend to think, well, that must be the standard because everybody else is doing it. And I think that's getting to be where the point is that we're just seeing more and more because people are just starting to do what everybody else is doing. I think the underlying question that staff has, is this good for tourism? We know that tourism is your biggest growth industry in this county. We're building new hotels. We're doing a lot of work to promote and encourage people to come to town. When they get off the freeway and see this, is this really good for tourism? Does this encourage people to want to stay in Atascadero, or does this send the wrong kind of message? I think that's kind of the question we're looking at. So from just a policy level, what we're hoping to do is get a little bit of direction from council, some sort of consensus, just in terms of what is the standard for appearance in Atascadero. So we've got this little exercise that we thought we could try here. Just basically trying to set a dial in terms of where we're at with appearance levels and where we want to be, and just see if they match up, then that means what we're doing is fine and we'll just keep doing that. If they don't match up, well, then maybe there's a gap there that we need to pay a little bit of attention to. So the first question is, where are we with the appearance? You know, what does it look like today? And then where do we want to be with it? So what we're hoping to do is have the council discuss on a scale of 1 to 100, and you guys can decide what the scale is where are we?
I have a series of questions you're wanting to work through with us, or is
just... No, really the goal is what we're hoping to do is... Let me escape this. What the goal is, we'd like the council to kind of tell us what you think the level of code enforcement or appearance review on El Camino is today.
Where we are and where do we want to be.
And where do you want to go? So if they both match up, then we don't do anything.
Yeah.
If they're off by a little, then maybe we do a little. If they're off by a lot, then maybe we do a little bit more. So we're hoping to just get some direction from the council in terms of just knowing, are we doing what you want us to be doing?
Very good. Well, before we go, I think we'll have some procedural questions first. I had a number of questions or comments about through this whole process, and the last of the area, of course, was dealing with this. And I'm not sure if we ought to start with the end and this particular commercial appearance question, or kind of go through the series of things you've had. And I'm kind of just want to get some feedback from council. How do we want to proceed on this? This is something that I think we want to put a little more time into, so I'm just leery to make sure we're in agreement of how we want to proceed. Do folks have a lot of comments on a number of things that staff have presented tonight, or do you want to focus primarily just on this topic right now, the commercial appearance and this rating? Any sense?
I have several.
Yeah, I think several. Councilman Moreno?
Prior to
yeah.
This, if you want to focus on prior to this and come back, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I would suggest we hold off on this, and I think this is where we're going to end up at. But I'd almost like to start where we started and kind of go through a number of things I think we can kind of reach a consensus on pretty quickly. And then this is going to take a little more thinking, and I'd like to kind of spend some time with that. But if we get some other things off of our minds, it might help us focus a little more. So let's kind of work our way back. And I'm just going to throw out three areas I wanted to touch on before this without commenting yet, but then we'll just see if others have similar things. I'd like to talk a little bit about Eagle Ranch and the discussion there. I'd like to talk a little bit about the unpermitted actions and about possibly. I'm thinking that there's been a lot of economic changes since we started our discussions with this, and there's been a lot of political changes as well. And I'm assuming this is going to be brought back to council for some direction from us pretty soon at the point the report is done. We kind of have to weigh in and reassess where we are with this project because the economy is looking better, and that might change our perception of how things are looking. And the politics is a little more confusing at the county level for us, I think. So we may want to talk about that. So do you envision staff bringing this back to us in the near future?
Well, under your process, you've approved the draft DIR to begin, so that's going ahead. So what comes back, what happens after the draft is done, it'll go to Planning Commission, and then when it comes back to City Council, that's going to be final review adoption hearing. There's still a lot of other issues besides just environmental on here. So I think it would be appropriate for the council to give us direction in terms of what those issues are you might want to revisit before we get to a final hearing, and then we can work with the city attorney just on how we shape those issues within this process that we have going at the same time.
Yeah, I think we want to see a movement, but what's your recommendation then? You staff has a plan to bring this back for some discussion then?
Well, I think we're in agreement that there's some big issues that it would be good to get some more council direction on. So if that's the council's desire is for us to bring it back, I think staff would be agreeable to that.
Why don't we give some time, and I'd rather giving direction right now, if staff gives that some thought, and if they think that would be wise for us to have it on the agenda, or if we can kind of handle it in the process that's already in place. But I think we would like to know staff's opinion on that, if it would be good to have some more discussion. Any other thoughts on that, Councilman Kelly?
Yes, I don't have any problem with the normal process that we're going through, but I think the property tax issue, there's been some comments in the past that could be a deal killer. And like you say, things have changed. I would like to get an update, possibly, mm-hmm. of an estimate of the different options that could occur with the approval of Eagle Ranch.
My understanding that the county adopted a split that would give the county a certain amount of money when there was an annexation to a city, but that the cities in this county were not involved in that split discussion. So it was a contract without two parts, in my perspective. It was a unilateral contract rather than the norm. So I was wondering if this was actually legal, if there's a way for the cities in the county to sue, pursue, send letters, whatever it may be, what our course of action, if any, might be.
Thank you. Councilman Sturdivant.
Well, my concern is that on our agenda, it talked about an oral report, and I had no clue really what that was talking about. Now we're getting into a lot of stuff here, Eagle Ranch, we're getting into signs, and there's no public here. There's no clue as to what we were going to be talking about. So I'm concerned about us getting into all of this without having it agendized, people here being able to weigh in on these issues we're talking about.
Thank you. And I'm going to suggest, I see we have staff wanting to weigh in on this. I was going to suggest that maybe we've heard enough where staff could then take that and come back with some recommendations, at least on this Eagle Ranch issue. And now we're going to go to staff's response on this.
And I think that's what staff is looking for, is just some general direction to then bring back with a written report for the public to go through. So what we're trying to get some ideas on are those areas of concern that you'd like to see a staff report and move forward with, and so that we can bring those back to you.
So I think with what you've heard, at least dealing with Eagle Ranch, there's obviously a lot of questions, and so maybe if staff could take a shot at answering those questions for the council.
Absolutely. We'll spend some time at strategic planning again, figuring out and working it into our work plan.
And again, I think we would certainly like to see that project go forward. We just have to make sure we understand some components. Any other discussion on Eagle Ranch? The other area that I had some questions on was the unpermitted activities, and our staff is completed with their comments at this time. I'll clear their lights. I was concerned that, well, I believe we've already done a good job you've done a good job of making this an expeditious process, and I don't want to fall behind. So I wouldn't, however, I think we could just reaffirm that we believe in full cost recovery. I'm concerned that we're not doing a full cost recovery on code enforcement. I personally don't have a lot of sympathy if folks are not following the code, and then that's burning up a lot of resources, taking us away from doing what's going to really make some money. So I think we obviously can't take action on this item, but I think there'd be council consensus we want to take a look at that issue. Do we want to revisit full cost recovery? Do we want to reaffirm that? Do we want to consider cost recovery on code enforcement or not? And is that enough direction? Would there be one be council consensus to look at basically fee structure? And I think we thought we were going to do that. Is that enough direction for staff to?
Yes, we can bring back some additional information for you to look at.
Okay. Yes.
And maybe this will be addressed in what you bring back. I'm wondering when, and I know there has to be a process that's gone through for fees, is it ever legal, is probably the right word, to have built in cost of living increase, if you will, yearly or biannually, something like that. So maybe that's something that can be looked into as well. Do you know?
There is allowances for that. Again, you couldn't go on forever with just using CPI. You do have to adjust at times. We are in the process of the fee study, so we'll be doing that. We will be bringing back to you probably separately a little bit more information on code enforcement and some of those costs along with unpermitted activity.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like that would be wise so that we don't end up, 10 years down the line getting ourselves into a similar situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Fonzie and then Councilman Kelly.
Just a question regarding the code enforcement, that so often it's an unintentional infraction, and it's something that causes friction between neighbors. Obviously, it's a touchy subject. And so often it's something like on my street, which I have complained about, is trash cans left out for weeks on end on the street. How do you recover costs for all of these things if we're talking about full cost recovery? I think code enforcement may be one of those areas you really can't.
Yeah. So I would have no problem being somewhat aggressive in recovering costs on the gross violators.
Yeah. So I think that we'll have that discussion. Any other comments on that? And I do, with Councilwoman Moreno, my experience, and when we went through this, we did a formal study. I think that's what's required by law, is what actually are the costs. It's pretty thorough. And then by law, you're required to repeat that, not necessarily just have a percentage tied to any other index. It's got to really be tied to actual costs for doing the job. And so that's why it's we may be a little behind on cost recovery because we haven't done the study that's required so that it's based on some analysis. So we'll let staff bring that back. I think we've exhausted all the things we'd like to offer a thought on, and now down to the commercial appearance, which since Warren, you've done such a good job of making things look good, I'm going to trust you to try to guide us through this exercise now. I think we all have some thoughts and are anxious to say something, but I'll let you take over here.
Okay, well, I think the first one, we want to just pick a point of where we're at, and this is really arbitrary. We just want you to discuss and pick a point. The key one is where you want to get to, but we thought it would be useful for you to have a discussion about where you think you are. If zero is doing nothing and 100% is doing it, overdoing it, where do you think we're at today?
Well, let me ask just for fun for council, if everyone would pick two numbers in their head before we get to any discussion. Sure, okay, go ahead.
Warren, do you mean where we are in terms of code enforcement or where we are in terms of how we view the appearance?
Appearance.
I think how you view how El Camino looks today.
Okay, so not whether we're enforcing or not,
right.
But how
no.
we, okay.
Yeah, I think that's how I'm looking at it, is just your overall impressions of how the community looks in our commercial areas. How does it look to you now, and how did you want it to look? And so would you, anybody ready to throw out two numbers?
I happen to drive down, I drive down El Camino every day, but I notice that it appears to me it's getting worse. There's more and more A-frames. I mean, almost the sidewalks are littered by A-frames. Corners are saturated with it. And I think it's just kind of somehow got out of control and good. And like Brian mentioned earlier, I think that's more of a workshop area than just this meeting tonight. But I think there's definitely some room for improvement there. I certainly wouldn't want to go to 100% and just be so hardcore you can't do anything. I don't think that's what we are here in town.
So I think Councilman Kelly has given us a good example. He's got two numbers, a 35 and maybe a 65-70, and then some comments to back that up. So if we all do that, that would be great. Brian, go ahead.
I'll go next. Actually, I was thinking somewhere around 30 myself, and I'm noticing a lot of sandwich board signs, a lot of those feather-type signs, the signs that have gotten my attention in the stores I've looked for as I'm going up and down the El Camino. So I, too, am thinking probably about maybe a 75-80, somewhere in there. I'm kind of a stickler when it comes to, if we're going to have standards, we need to adhere to those standards. So, but I do want to have some flexibility in case, well, that's where we are today. We're in a flexible mode, helping the businesses in the Tascadero be able to be more profitable by allowing the signs on the streets and these kind of things. So I, too, am looking for, I want a little more accountability, but I do want to have flexibility, and I do want it to be more uniform. When I say uniform, I mean, when you look down the El Camino, you've got Galaxy Square, Colony Square, just it looks, the style and the way it all looks, there's a uniformity and a real class to it, and that's kind of, in my view, I'd like to see when people pull off the street in a Tascadero, there's that view, that look, it's like, oh, I'm in a Tascadero. It's like other towns I go to, when you go in, the street signs are the same, the business signs are the same, or of the same style, so it's like, oh, I know where I am, and it's something you like or something you don't like, but at least it's uniform throughout the city, and it's of a certain design. So that's what I'd like to see.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I'd say we're at a 30, and we'd like to be maybe a 70. And in terms of where we want to go, I think it would be nice if we could come up with a roadmap again. I've always liked that. We've seen Jerry do that. We've seen Warren do that in the permit process and economics. I think it would be helpful for the council to take a priority, whatever it may be, the feather signs, the street signs, the ones on the corner, whatever it is that we decide, temporary banners, and go step by step so we have enforcement that's logical, can be explained to the public that we're trying to get the signs off the street by 5 p.m., let's just say, whatever they may be, if they're blocking the sidewalk and so forth. They may not have the money or the resources when they first start up, so I would like to give them a little more grace so that they can
get successful and then replace that old banner sign with a real sign. And I think this is going to take quite a bit of work to make this work for businesses, that every business is struggling. They're doing what they think is right to attract the business to their store. So we have to be rather sensitive to that as well.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
I would say 30-80. And I think the question that Warren asked is really appropriate, is how does it look, not just to us from an aesthetic view of, you know, do I like that or don't I, but how does it look to tourists? And so I think I heard Councilwoman Fonzie say, you know, they're doing what they think is best to bring in business, and I wonder if they're sometimes, you know, doing things that then turns off business in another way that is unintentional and obviously not realized, because otherwise someone wouldn't do that. I'm concerned from a legal point of view. In attending the CJPIA training last year, they were very firm that if you have an ordinance, enforce your ordinance, or don't have one. And so when you consider the A-frames, things like that, and I know we have made some easements and such, but we do put ourselves at risk when we don't enforce. My second concern about enforcement is that if we don't enforce this ordinance, how do we, you know, in good conscience, uphold other ordinances? So we tell someone you're in violation of this, but that one doesn't matter. So I think there needs to be a consistency in how we enforce what we say is an ordinance, what we say is important. I like personality as well. Things don't have to. I mean, I was in Carmel, and certainly I loved all the little signs hanging, but they all had personality to them, so they weren't all the same sign. So there is a way to have personality, but also a certain, I think, uniformity in terms of what Councilmember Sturdivant was saying is, you know, in terms of class, it looks classy. And I don't mean high-end Ritz-Carlton, but classy can be funky and whatever else. So I'd like to look at all this. I know I did meet a council member at the League of California Cities back in September when I was at the retail session, and in their city they actually had the business community write the ordinance, and therefore they were very invested in it and kind of almost, you know, self-police, if you will. And I would be interested if my colleagues like to contact that council member and get some...
And unfortunately, I think, as has been said, it's often what a new business thinks is the right thing to do. Honestly, I've seen a lot of marketing studies. We've seen some in the EVC, did a lot of studies on tourism and the wine industry and actually on signage. And the fact is, most of what folks have, I'd say 80% of the signage in our community is ineffective from a statistical marketing standpoint. Some of it is simply the speed of traffic. You don't see it. And it's at the wrong level, color combinations, and it becomes noise. And unfortunately, when somebody has a new idea, you know, the thing is blowing in the air or there's something new, it's noticed the first time and then everybody has it. It's just noise. You don't have any differentiation. And so I think part of it is an education. I think we need to take the lead on that of, again, just helping business. And I think that's something that the chamber could take the lead on. What is effective signage? And if we can help support that, I think that would be a good investment of some of our marketing money. What is effective? And I think I've been reluctant to weigh in the past, earlier in my council career, so to speak, because I felt like the city wasn't such a good example. I feel like really we have raised the bar, and we've done a very good job of making our city be attractive and be functional. This building is an example, Sunken Gardens. Look at our streetscape. And quite frankly, what didn't look as tacky 10 years ago is looking pretty tacky today, because we've raised the bar. We've raised the bar on our architectural detail, which is substantially more costly than the signage. And I know I've worked with artists of doing some pretty low-cost signage that's actually attractive and has some character. And I agree with, you know, the flames at the hot rod shop, That doesn't bother me. Just like in front of Wilkins' studio, there's something that fits the business. I think you can be creative and do something that has some meaning. It represents that business. And if we can help encourage businesses to see, I think we could have some ambiance and still have an eclectic perspective. And I kind of divide it into three categories we kind of got to work on. One, just not worked in the past. And again, I would rather take some of that marketing money we have and help our local businesses do a better job of marketing, almost like you know, the trade-in your syringes the police department does or something. Well, you know, can you bring in your shabby sign and we give you some help on that? I think there's, again, we could work through existing business. Quite frankly, there's some very good businesses that are good at marketing and making signage. Can we get the chamber to take the lead on basically growing our own, building our own, and really support our own local businesses and do a better job? Where folks just really don't know where to go, what to do on that. And that might take care of that emotional need. But quite frankly, I think we're really down to what, Councilman Kelly and Councilman Moreno mentioned. We're down to a safety issue. There's been times I've had to call the police station. Somebody's got an A-frame sign in the street. Folks, you just can't do that. You've got a sign right in the sidewalk pathway. That's how Paso Robles got sued for gazillions of dollars on ADA accessibility issues because they weren't enforcing or positioning. So I think it's time to fish or cut bait for us as a council. So I would like to, I don't know how you'd like to proceed with that.
Well, let's just
I'm missing. Rochelle would like to weigh in. But let me, before we go to Rochelle, Councilman Kelly had his light on. Go ahead.
Well, I think right now enforcement is probably a waste of time because I really don't know if we have any standards that we can stand behind unless it happens to be a health and safety deal. I would like to see initially, I think a lot of it would be education. You know, if somebody's in violation, and I'm sure they probably do that now, is, you know, you can't have your sign here in the sidewalk. You have to get it out of there. And maybe they could help them relocate it someplace else or set up a time plan or something like Roberta was saying. But I think education is going to be a big part of the sign problem that we have. And we probably can get educated by the businesses, too, what they may need or what they would want. And I think we can all come together, hopefully in somewhat of a reasonable period of time, and get this resolved.
Thank you. Well, I do want to go to staff, and I want to get back over here again. You want to cut us off, don't you, pretty soon?
Not necessarily me. I mean, you also reminded me that we definitely want to open it up to public comment when you are ready, Mayor, and we'll go from there.
Yes, and we're going to do that, and I think recognizing we are not making any final decisions tonight. We are kind of venting years of frustration ourselves, and we want to allow the public to do that as well over several meetings. But I'm at this time going to open up to the public. If any member of the public would like to come forward, please weigh in. Welcome. This is a monumental occasion. Welcome.
Good evening. I don't particularly like these sidewalk or sandwich signs or A-frame signs. I think they're very dangerous. I'm surprised we haven't had a major accident so far. And as far as the flags go, I think they're really ineffective from the marketing standpoint. Some of them use them as an open sign where, yeah, we're open for business. And if they're set back, then in that respect, they do work. But, you know, others to just advertise that they're selling a product, I think most people know that they're already selling that product anyway, and it's just an eyesore. I'd kind of like to see those flags go. I think they cheapen the looks of the downtown. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I noticed there is a liquor store that has about 20 low-cost signs covering up a fairly nice-looking fence that says they've got beer at the liquor store. I'm thinking, thank you for that information. I think we would, you can see we want to talk about this. I do want to definitely, I will mention that we have gone down this path a time or two before. We have asked the Chamber and Main Street to take this on, and they kind of, we never quite got anything back. It's a tough challenge, and I think we need to kind of take some leadership in it. But I'll just leave it with staff to certainly, and I know you're meeting with Chamber regularly. We definitely need the business community involved in this. We'll let you bring it back in announcements and reports. I'm going to start at my right and work to my left on anything before we get to committee reports. Anything you'd like to talk about your activities? You don't have to have it. That's an activity. Yes, you could talk about that.
I did just want to say that both Chief Haley and myself are supporting the library, the Friends of the Library, with doing Dancing with Our Stars. So I know we're both very excited about that, or I am. He's a little tentative, but we're looking forward to it. And I know that the event did sell out quickly, as was planned, but they are doing a Friday night dress rehearsal, and those tickets are available for $20 each. And I know K-John's is selling them, and there are probably other places if you go on the library website.
Very good. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I met at an ad hoc meeting with Debbie Arnold and several members that are involved in the LINC and the YMCA. And the YMCA is actively looking at Atascadero as a partner for various recreation opportunities, such as after-school computer use or study areas or sports. They self-insure for in terms of liability. They have programs that are low-cost with scholarships. I think it's actually a win for us if we can grab them. So I will keep you informed, Chief, as this goes forward, but they weren't aware that we had a community center and that we actually could use those kind of programs here in Atascadero, so we're going to make some progress on it.
Very good. Thank you. Councilman Sturdivant.
No report. I also was at the same meeting with Roberta. Excuse me. But last week, Heather and I met with John Neal from the water company and got quite an extensive briefing on the operation of the water company and where we actually are. And it's quite a relief to know that we are in pretty good shape for water. I say we're probably at the top of the list and that our water company is doing a really good job out there. That's not to say that we still shouldn't try to conserve water on it, but it was a very nice relief to know that we do have a very efficient water company.
Yes, E.G. Lewis had a good vision, and it is amazing. We have the lowest cost water in the county, the lowest cost wastewater treatment plant in the county.
Well, what was also interesting, I had never seen it yet, is the basin where the Nacimiento water actually gets drained into, right. I think it was 5 million gallons a day that they can process. And it's an area of town that you don't normally go to, so it was really quite interesting.
Very good. Thank you. We'll move.
But we're all hearing things on the radio and a lot of different rumors going around, so I'll try to peg those down for you in the future and let you know where we're going or not going.
Yes, and I see we do have you down on, you are on the Local Area Agency Formation Commission and the chairperson, and we should make note of that in our outline here on the minutes, because I think it's good to recognize Councilwoman Fonzie is the chair of that committee. Councilwoman Moreno.
No report.
Well, I will just go through. Yes.
Can I report?
I forgot because you'd started with the others.
I've been so quiet tonight.
You're so quiet, yes, and so polite. Please, go ahead.
Yes. Last week, I attended the Citizens Advisory Board down at the State Hospital, where I represent the city. And during the conversation, it came up that they have a very hard time recruiting top echelon doctors and what have you down there, mainly because of the cost of housing up here. And I also sit on the EVC board, and I hear the same stories down there from the high-tech companies and what have you, as they have difficulties because of the cost of housing. So while I was sitting there, I said, well, you know, we've got 300 or 400 houses under construction here in Atascadero that are basically pretty much affordable to the normal person. They were unaware of that, and Gregor Jones was also at the meeting, who represents the Chamber of Commerce. So in a brief discussion, we in the future will be getting together with the Chamber, the city, and representatives from the hospital, and see if we can kind of put some PR packages together, not only for the state hospital, but hopefully go out to some of these high-tech businesses in Paso Robles and San Luis, something like a package if they want to come for the weekend where they can get reduced hotel deals, you know, the golfing packages, kind of things like we do in the have done in the past, zoo tickets, movie tickets, or what have you, because I think we're missing out on quite an opportunity there to promote our town and the housing we have and the lifestyle. And down there at the hospital, they have a $215 million budget, and you figure about 70% of that goes towards payroll. 90% of their people live in Atascadero. That's $135 million. We need to start working a little closer with the hospital down there. So in the next few weeks, I think the Chamber and us will get together, and hopefully we can get the word out there about our town.
Well, having come from that field and trying to recruit psychiatrists, it's, being on city council is great, but all of us are involved in regional boards, and that's where you've put two together. I think your involvement with EVC and with the state hospital board, you know, putting those two together has been a very strategic combination. So that's, I'm glad you're going ahead with that.
Well, the other thing, I guess my term is up, but I'm reapplying for it. But if there's anyone else that would like to apply for it, it's...
That's an appointment by the governor. I think we're full support of you.
Yeah,
on that.
It takes a couple of years to get it done. So.
Yes. No, I think you've done a good job on it. But that's a good example of putting two problems together and solving the equations. That's great. That concludes for you. Okay, my turn. We've had a number of topics at the County Mayor's Roundtable. We did review voting records for a lot of our representatives, and though I'm a big supporter of our senator, he has not had a very good voting record for cities, and we are trying to work with Senator Monning on that to make sure he's informed of what really is helpful for cities across the board, across all districts. Another thing that's been a topic is looking at the Visitors Conference Bureau. They've approached a number of cities and have some ideas and kind of lobby us individually. And it's thought that really the cities ought to kind of take a look at this on a regional basis. Just exactly how do all the pieces fit together? I think countywide, all the mayors have the same questions we have. Is we've got so many parallel organizations working on promotion. Are we really being strategic and cost-effective? And quite frankly, I think there's a thought that maybe the Chamber should be a little bit more involved as kind of an organization that represents all the businesses. So, you know, I think we're on the same track as the other cities and kind of revisiting some of these issues. We haven't had an Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting for a while, but that's coming up. And I think, as I mentioned at our last meeting, Supervisor Arnold brought up an issue that Supervisor Meacham and I supported. We want to have a revisit of plastic bags, believe it or not. There are some options that weren't considered previously when this was looked at, and as painful as it may be, we want to revisit that a little bit and make sure we didn't jump the gun on things that might be useful for our community, specifically some of the ones that are
retiring.
Thank you. It has come up that Councilwoman Fonzi, taking on an incredibly large responsibility as chairperson for the LAFCO organization, does need to step down from the Design Review Committee and APCD both. Well, I was prepared to make an appointment for the Design Review Committee, and I would ask Councilwoman Moreno if she is able to join Councilman Kelly on that.
I am.
And very good, Ev. And really, I thought you were chair of APCD.
Yes, I forgot to tell you. Yes, I was chair last year for part of the year because of the death of Paul Teixeira.
Yes.
I had been vice chair, And much to my surprise, I assumed that it would be Adam Hill, because he's my vice chair now, would become the chairman this year, but I was appointed chair of APCD.
Okay, well, that I understood. I thought you were saying you were needing to step down from that, too, and I was having a panic attack.
I've just got too many outside things going to give
okay.
it the
well,
time
I
that
feel
I
much
right
better
now.
Yes.
Otherwise, I would love to stay on it.
You're chairing two responsible positions, and understandable to step down from design review committee, and thank you. Yeah, for a minute I thought, oh, boy. Thank you. We got that resolved. Well, then we will take that as a point. I assume there's no objection to that, because I know your time is limited, and Bob can't fill two positions as energetic as he is.
It's a good committee.
It is. Does staff have any other report? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Successor.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have to adjourn the council meeting and move to the successor agency meeting, and that will calls for a call to order and a roll call for the successor agency.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Here.
Councilmember Kelly.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here for this
all
one,
present
too.
Present again.
Thank you. First item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Fonzie, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is the consent calendar. We have no public hearings. We do have a management report. I assume that is... looks like that is going to be Administrative Services Director Rangel. Welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson O'Malley and board members. Just a moment here while we get our display up. Awesome. Thank you. Love technology. Okay, so the item you have before you tonight is the ROPS 1415A, the required obligation payment schedule that covers the period July 1st through December 31st, 2014. So just as a little bit of a review, sorry, technical difficulties. Okay. So the ROPS are due to the Department of Finance each year on March 1st and October 1st. This year, technically, it's March 3rd because March 1st is a Saturday, so they gave us a couple more days. but the ROPS cover a period of 6 months, so those are in advance. So the one that we're turning in this March will go for the July through December, so it's in advance of the time frame that it covers. It's called the ROPS 1415A because it's for the fiscal year 1415, and it's for the first section, which is A, the second half is B. Kind of makes it easy to track. And of course, this is all because of AB1X26, the dissolution bill, and Assembly Bill 1484. On the ROPS, we have the amount of RPTTF, and as you recall, that is the Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund. We're requesting $977,167 that primarily covers bond debt service payments and an administrative allowance. So the legislation does allow $125,000 per six-month period for the administrative allowance to cover the costs of these successor agency meetings, the oversight board meetings, that sort of thing.
Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public. Any questions or comments from the public? Seeing none, we'll close that, bring it back to council for motion or deliberation.
I would move approval of the Recognized obligation payment schedule 1415A, July 1, 2014 through December 31st, 2014.
Councilman second. Kelly, it must be your turn. Yeah, thank you for that second. A motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item. I think your mic is off.
Thank you. The next item is the Long Range Property Management Plan and Transfer of Ownership. The agency, as required by the redevelopment legislation, the agency submitted the Long Range Property Management Plan, or LRMPMP, to the State Department of Finance on August 15, 2013. This was within the six-month time frame after the agency received the finding of completion on March 8, 2013. The DOF, the Department of Finance, acknowledged this, the Long Range Property Management Plan, in a letter dated January 17, 2014. And although they approved the plan, there was 8 items on the plan. 6 of the 8 items, they essentially indicated that we didn't need to include them on the plan, that they were kind of excluding them from their approval piece. So here is a table that lists all 8 of the properties that were included on the Long Ridge Property Management Plan. It's also in your agenda package if it's easier to see there. It lists the property, a brief description, and the Department of Finance's determination on each of these items. Property 1 is the Creekside Building, or former City Hall, temporary City Hall, and Property 4 is a construction easement on the Tascadero Creek Reservation Number 3 near Lewis Bridge. The Department of Finance acknowledged the recommendation for the disposal or the disposition of both of these properties as indicated in Property 3, which was paving of a city parking lot, Property 5, the enhancements at Sunken Gardens, Property 6, the zoo entrance and restroom project, and Property 8, the repair of the wrestling Bacchante statue, were determined by the Department of Finance to be improvements on city-owned property. So again, they said they didn't need to be included on the long-range property management plan. The Health and Safety Code, Section 34181, Section A, requires that the Oversight Board direct the successor agency to dispose of all assets and properties of the former redevelopment agency. It also allows the Oversight Board to direct the successor agency to transfer ownership of assets that were used for governmental purposes to the appropriate governmental jurisdiction. In this case, that would be the city. So properties 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8 are all assets of the former redevelopment agency that were used for a governmental purpose and have no value on the open market and are essentially affixed to or part of city property. So therefore, staff is recommending that the ownership of these assets be transferred to the city. And that concludes staff's report.
Questions? Councilwoman Fonzie.
Question regarding the Creekside City Hall.
Mike.
Thank you. Thought it was on. Are we paying anything to keep it up or market it, or is the city completely out of it in terms of redevelopment funds and city funds?
The city is not paying anything to keep it up. There is some money in the ROPS to maintain it because it is still a former redevelopment asset. So there is some funding that's allowed to maintain the asset. It's really in the best
interests
of the successor agency to do that.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, we can go to public. Or did you have further? Okay, we'll take it to the public. Any member of the public wishing to comment? Seeing none approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council, and we have a recommendation. Board acknowledge and concur with State Department of Finance response to the long-range property management plan, and Board approve the draft resolution ordering the transfer of assets to the city of Atascadero. Adjourned. Thank you.